Long.
What's going on, people, man? You're tuning into episode 18 of the It's Not Easy podcast, man. We've got Reece Henry here today, man. How you doing, man? You good?
I'm good, man. I'm good. And yourself?
Yeah, man. I'm good, man. How's the week been, man? All good?
Been busy, to say the least. I said chasing solicitors. You know, got a few sales that are close to being exchanged and completed. So, yeah, it's been a busy one.
Very busy. Yeah, man. That's all good. How have you... The weather has been a bit awkward, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, a little bit, like, to say the least, yeah.
Like, a few days are crazy hot, like today and yesterday, built in, and then a few times it's been cold and wet. How you been finding it? How you been navigating it?
It's London, isn't it? It's the UK. It's always up and down, but it is what it is, man.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Let's get started with some quick fire questions.
Yeah, go on.
Mm. Alright, cool. So... we'll be interested to get your point of view on this one. So, property or stocks?
Properties.
Property?
Yeah.
Okay. Any particular reason?
As an asset? I just know more about it.
You know more about it? Yeah. Are you into stocks?
Yeah.
Same. Serious. Okay, it's interesting. Bonds or ISAs?
Bonds.
The bonds are more secure, right? Yeah. I've learned a lot more about bonds in recent years. Yes. Yeah, legitimate, man.
Yeah, 100%.
It's serious still. And of course, the returns, it's more secure, right?
Definitely.
Cool. In terms of housings, semi-detached or detached?
Detached. That's a no-brainer.
Are there any pros to having a semi-detached?
You've not got one neighbour on the other side, but detached is always preferable.
Yeah.
Yeah, because for most people, just because you've got no one on either side.
Not on either side, for sure. Okay, cool. What is one common mistake that people make when buying a house?
Picking bad solicitors. Picking bad solicitors.
We'll get into that still. And last one, yeah. What is the biggest lesson that you've learned so far in 2024?
Just to be patient, and resilient. A lot more resilient than what I've ever had to be honest. So, yeah, okay. Those two lessons alone.
Yeah. Resilience is serious, yeah, because it's been an interesting year. I feel like 2024, for me personally, I've enjoyed this year, man. I've enjoyed this year. I started a new role this year. So, yeah, like, overall, I've enjoyed it. A few elements of my, creativity have blossomed this year as well.
That's good, man.
So, you say go, man. We're here, man.
100%.
Yeah, man. We're here. Cool. So, let's get into things though. So people who don't know, what you do and the field that you're into, how would you introduce it and introduce you as well and the work you do?
I specialize in luxury real estate. That's where I've transitioned from. But I used to do just normal real estate. So your average 2-bedroom houses, 4-bedroom, and I still do it to this day.
Okay.
It's just, where my main focus is now is the higher end of the market. That's in the southeast in Kent area. That's where I'm based mainly.
Okay, that's it. And I did want to actually ask, how did you get into real estate in the beginning?
Okay.
Your introduction into it.
So I really wanted something that was nicely balanced because I came from field sales. So okay. I used to, they called us chuggers, charity muggers, whatever you want to call it. But in fact, Io, that was on this show before, we came from the same industry. We basically used to work for Amnesty International. We stood on the street. We got people to sign up to charities. But as you can imagine, the weather, the attitude of people, you're going to a different area, different day.
Oh my gosh. How was that experience? I dabbled in that briefly.
Okay.
And it's
okay.
Like, oh my gosh, I did not enjoy it at all. How did you find
it? You know what? A lot of people used to say, isn't this difficult? But after a period of time, it actually gets, you start realizing who your target audience is. So it was a lot easier to spot who would potentially donate, who wouldn't, who's not interested, etc. So I really wanted something where I was still outside, not stuck in an office, but still got to talk to people and whatever not. And I always had a passion for properties and wanted to know more about it. So what I did is I basically started applying for real estate jobs all within the southeast in Kent. And then at the same time, I got 2 job offers. And then I just picked the one that was closest to where I was planning to move to. And then that's how I went into
real estate. So You know when you mentioned applying for roles, I'm assuming obviously with the past that you had at the time, how, what like transferable skills or experience?
Sales, people skills, objection responses, because again, when you're speaking to people in the street and they're saying, no, thank you, I'm in a rush, whatever not, you've got weather to deal with as well, rain, hot, whatever it may be. Those skills are transferable into the real estate world because, you know, you're dealing with so many different types of people. You know, whether it's a richer person because they got a £2 million, £3 million house, or you might be dealing with someone in the lower end of the market where they haven't got as much money. You've got to know how to transition basically each time. So
that's interesting. That's quite interesting. I'm assuming when you first got that role, ever since then, you've just been heads down and flowing since then.
Yeah, definitely. As I said, I was eager to learn. In my last job, where I was employed for a real estate agent, I learned a lot and I got quite a few promotions.
Built up.
And I flourished from there and realised I wanted to do more with the real estate side of things itself.
Yeah. Like a question that I did kind of have for you, and it's something that like I thought about for a little while. Especially after seeing the work that you do.
Yeah.
What would you say is the main differential between real estate and luxury real estate, in your opinion?
So it's more the audience. So you have to, with a property, for example, at 400,000, 500,000 and below, the sellers are a lot easier to deal with. Their expectations aren't as high. Their buyers are a lot more open-minded, and they're also willing to listen a lot more. Whereas on the higher end of the market, you've got stubborn sellers that will tell you what their property is worth rather than them listening to the advice you've got to give.
That's interesting.
The buyers will then, similar thing, tell you what the property is worth based on their value. And then you're basically stuck in the middle of two stubborn people that don't want to listen too much.
Yeah. Basically dealing with people who are more experienced, really. Or they feel they're more experienced, right?
100%, because What they fail to remember is that even though they might have sold and bought several times, especially from my experience, I've been doing this for 7 years. So when you're trying to explain to a seller, look, I've done it probably just as long as you've done it, probably sold, you know, more properties than you have. It starts to become a monetary thing where it's like, well, because I've got more money than you, I'm not listening to you. I know what's best. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, that's. Yeah, that's where it stands with sellers on that end of the market.
Yeah, that's really interesting, obviously, and it's about the people that you're dealing with. So I did want to ask, though, on that, what would you say has been your highest, like, value deal that you've completed?
Recently, I sold one in Bromley. It took about 11 weeks of negotiation, again, because of that, what we just mentioned about the stubbornness. And that was a £2,250,000 deal. So that's my biggest deal to date. That was a tough sell to get through. But it could have been smoother had I had a bit more support on either end. But it comes with the territory.
100%.
Once you've been doing it for a while, you kind of realise that.
Yeah, 100%. On the timings point of view that you mentioned, what would you say is the average time for in the luxury side of things, and how is that changed from, let's say, like a normal house or like a residential house?
So again, it all kind of, so our role as estate agents, whether it's on the higher end or on the lower end, is to get the sale agreed. So after the sale is agreed, especially in the UK, it's handed over to the solicitors to do the paperwork side of things, and that's where typically it should take anything from 12 weeks to 16 weeks on average.
Okay.
But our job really is to make sure that the buyer and seller is using what we call a reputable solicitor, one we may have used before, so that we can keep a closer eye on how the sale progresses. And that's what our role is as well, to keep the sale going from start to finish.
Yeah.
So the better the solicitor they use, which is usually the ones that are a little bit more expensive, the easier it will go, and the quicker it should go, so that everyone should get moved in and paid a lot quicker. That's how it should be. But then you do have people that will tell you that they want to go with said solicitor because they think, again, they've been recommended or referred, whatever not.
Yeah, 100%. And like, it's interesting because prior to me coming across you and your content, luxury real estate isn't really something that I probably saw a lot of. But in your point of view, though, would you say it is something that is becoming more popular on social media, or even from people from our community, would you say it's something that the exposure is growing?
I think it's more the newer money, the newer generation. Mm. They're starting to want to tap in. They're making a lot more shows, trying to entice people into real estate because there's a lot of money in it.
Yeah.
And once you know what you're doing. So I definitely think social media has played a massive part of that. In fact, to be honest, I wouldn't be part of the company I'm in now if it wasn't for social media because I came across it from LinkedIn. Me being active on there was how I ended up joining
connections,
the company.
Right?
Yeah, exactly that.
Well, connections. So on average, for like a solicitor in luxury real estate game, is it, I'm assuming in... usually like a percentage of the deal you usually get? Or how does that usually work?
So we get a split. We obviously we charge the seller.
Yeah.
And then between me and my business partner Tyron, we have a 50% split.
Okay. So. Okay, that's serious. And it's something that you're able to you build and learn and you grow more experience and as the time goes on.
That's it.
That's interesting because I also did see like you're quite open about your life and you mentioned that you're like a homeowner
to yourself,
right? What are the, like, would you say are the aspects that you learn on your journey in becoming a homeowner that kind of help you in the field that you're in now?
So luckily, and I say this because I've managed to get up the ladder a lot quicker than what people my age group usually do. I didn't have to deal with an estate agent when I first bought. It was through one of the agents where there was no estate agent involved. It was more of an online kind of company.
Okay.
And I ended up doing the negotiations through the seller directly. Okay, so I had to learn everything on the spot.
Yeah.
And at the time, I just started in real estate at the same time. So we bought and was beginning the journey of my real estate career. Yeah. So I had to learn how to chase the solicitors. I had to basically think on my feet quite a lot. And the company, again, I was with before, because it was a franchise, you wasn't kept in a box. You was basically thrown in the deep end and told, right, you have to do this, 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 and this, and this, and learn very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So I had to adapt those skills to me being a seller and realize, you know, where there's mistakes, where there's errors, the solicitors, other little bits and pieces to make the transition a lot smoother. So then now that I've done it a few more times, I know exactly what to look out for.
You're the potholes to avoid, right?
100%. Yeah.
It's quite interesting that you mentioned that because, you know, when you say the process of getting onto the ladder, and of course, it's a huge talking point now. You hear a lot about it. What would you say, of course, in your point of view, like is the biggest like hindrance of people in our community trying to get onto the property ladder? And what would you,
It's the beginning part of saving the money.
Yeah.
Because for me and my partner to get the money together, we had to sacrifice pretty much a whole year of our life. Like, you know, our friends and family were saying, let's go parties, let's go and do this. You know, you have to sacrifice it all. And we was disciplined enough it was hard. It was really hard.
Yeah, that's real, man.
You know, we lost friends along the way. You know, good friends we thought at the time. And we had to sacrifice it all because in order to get the money together for the deposit, which is the hardest part for people in the UK, is to get that money together. That's why a lot of people just think, you know, I'll just rent because I can just pay a couple thousand and it's just a lot easier.
Yeah.
And then, but obviously in the long run, you're paying a lot of money to somebody that owns that property and you'll never own it yourself. So, I would say that's probably the hardest part of getting onto the ladder. Yeah. Once you've mastered that bit and done the discipline for like a year or so, and obviously if you have help from family or friends to build up a boost of money, you know,
like mum and dad as well.
Like mum and dad, auntie, uncle, whoever it is.
Yeah. No, but it's interesting that you say that, and it's so true because I guess it's the element of, especially in our community and society as well, more broadly, like, are you willing to sacrifice now for something greater in the future?
Yeah.
That's the question that we all have to face, right?
100%.
Like, are you willing to put aside joy or gratification now for something in the future that's going to be of more 100%. Value?
So a lot of people, they're so keen to just get, you know, the gratification now.
Yeah.
So, but now, everything's instant, everything's impulsive. And then they won't think about the future as much and then until it becomes too late. And then they look back and have all these regrets and dreams are basically not available anymore because, you know, they're so deep into what they're doing.
Yeah, that's deep. You know, you mentioned the things that you have to sacrifice as well. Like, on like a lifestyle point of view, is it things like maybe I can't? Is it the small things like a Netflix account
it wasn't that bad.
So like, how does it really, like the like range of it, how far does it really go?
I mean, you know, when I think back to when we were saving for the deposit, again, friends at the time were saying, you know, let's go out to a club, let's go to this bar, let's go to, but it was more like a, you know, a weekendly thing, where they wanted to do it all the time.
Yeah.
We were honestly saying, look, we need to put money aside right now. We just don't have the funds to keep going out. Not like we didn't go out at all, but there was a lot less of it during that whole year period because we was just really trying to knuckle down and put as much money aside as possible so that we could, you know, get the deposit together, basically.
Yeah.
But again, some of the friends at the time, they just didn't realise and they thought, well, we're being boring or we're not trying to be as engaging. And it wasn't that at all. It was just really that we needed to focus. And they were unfocused, so that we just went our separate ways.
That's quite deep. Now you say it like that, because it's like, damn, like you might lose out on some people, but who just aren't aligned with you. It's part of life, right?
That's the thing. Not everyone's supposed to be part of the whole journey. You know, some people drop off as things go along.
Yeah.
You know, it's a shame because you know you see these friends, and some of them come from school, or you've known them since wherever. And you think they're going to be around forever. And then as soon as you start trying to get a little bit more serious, a lot of them will think, well, you know, he's not the same. He's changed.
He thinks he's too good for us.
He's too good for us.
You know?
But these sacrifices were made to better the position I'm in now, so that we can, you know, so that we can flourish and so that, you know, my legacy can flourish as well.
Yeah, no, that's real. That's deep. That's really good to hear as well from, from that point of view. And I guess it's also how I look at it as well. It's quite interesting because I'd love to hear about this as well because it's something that I often think about when you balance the goal of property with the financial pressures that come with, of course, having a partner.
100%.
Like, it costs money to, like, dates and gifts and so on and so forth.
100%.
I'd love to know, like, how you balance that.
Do you know what? There's actually a show, I'm not going to plug it, but it's there's a show that speaks about the sacrifice between the marriage side of things and getting on the property ladder. Now, that's what we've come to realise, that, you know, a lot of our friends, I'll be honest, are married. We're pretty much the only ones that aren't. Like, me and my partner are engaged, but we're not at that marriage stage because we wanted to kind of set up things for the future, especially with houses, our kids, etc., etc.
Sure.
So it will be done. It's just it couldn't be done then.
Time
so
is.
I know with you know, it's difficult, especially in the UK and other countries as well, because marriage, you know, getting married is such an expensive thing, especially when you're in a relationship for such a long period of time. So you know, I know a lot of people will be at a kind of crossroads where they think, well, I love this person I'm with. Shall we get married, or I love this person I'm with, shall we buy our first house? And a lot of people do choose the marriage route.
That's so true.
And then they're stuck in a position where they then can't afford to buy a property because they're then renting because they want to
spend so much on the wedding as well.
So that's why we did it the other way, where we thought, you know what, both of us plan to be self-employed. Let's do you know, get ourselves on the property ladder, get ourselves stable, you know, kids and whatever not, and then we'll then do the whole the marriage thing from there.
And I think that's, I kind of think, I agree on that point of view in terms of, I think the fundamentals of the finances of things, in life, usually you can't go wrong if you cut your finances first, right?
100%.
It's the foundation, the lifeblood of our life, right?
100%, yeah.
So, but then it just really depends on the person that you're with.
It does, true. That's true.
Because if you're with someone who says, I want to get married, that
even
the next year,
100%.
Then that's, you know what I mean? That's it. Definitely. And a lot of men get put in that situation where it's like, the person that I'm with, like, is a huge thing for her. She wants to get married in the next 18 months. You got to put that first.
Yeah, of course.
And probably it will kind of get put on the back burner. But that's really interesting. Now I think about it, it happens a lot.
It does.
In our community as well.
It does.
Like,
it does.
Especially in our community where marriage is a big thing. Like, not the celebration, the family is a huge thing. So it does happen a lot.
It does.
It'd be good to hear about that. I didn't even plan to go into that as well.
I've got a touch on it. I said with relationships as well in general, it's really important to have someone that's very supportive, because my partner that's been on this journey with me, we've been, you know, together for 9 years.
Wow.
So, you know, from the time I had not a penny to my name to now, you know, being in a good position. So yeah, we've been growing together. We moved out of the area together. And you know, that's why we talk about things and discuss it. So to do something like this, especially on the luxury end of the market, or even real estate in general, you do have to have someone that's patient.
Like-minded as well.
Like-minded, otherwise it just doesn't work at all.
100%. I never asked, so like, you know when you did luxury real estate work, and you go to these houses, of course, like promo rate and stuff, like, does it ever inspire you? Like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Some of these houses
phenomenal.
What's that experience like?
It's breathtaking. And do you know, I think the thing that I love the most, probably more than the houses and seeing the finish, you know, whether it's stone floors or you know, the wallpaper or whatever way they've done the design of the house through their architects and what have you, is the humbleness behind the sellers that I personally like to work with. So a lot of our business does come from knocking on doors. You know, even today I've had a few phone calls from doors I've knocked on. Serious. I'm then got appointments booked in with them next week. And it's just how calm they are about the position that they've got themselves into. Because you do meet sellers on the other end as well, where you go and try to speak to them, have a conversation, and they're just really rude for no reason. But yeah, I think, yeah, it's very inspiring. I've definitely taken a lot of ideas from some of the houses I've seen. I've used it for the house that I'm currently in when I was renovating. Yeah. And yeah, it's really beautiful, some of the houses I go to. And, you know, sometimes I wish people could be a fly on the wall to see some of the houses I have seen that, you know, the public won't ever see because, you know, maybe they weren't ready to sell yet or whatever the case is. But you see some phenomenal homes.
That's inspiring, I can imagine it'd be very inspiring. Like, even for the ones that I've seen so far, like, when you pay this up, is a lot. I did want to also ask though, you know, we touched about renting earlier, right? And there's a growing conversation with, you know, the mortgage rates, and some people saying, is it worth it? In terms of, it could be easier for the time being that I rent for now, and I wait for the rates to be in a better place. What's kind of your thoughts on that?
If you're in a position, it really depends on circumstance.
Yeah.
If you live at home, this is what I say to everyone, and you know, I'll talk to the camera and say, if you're in a position where you live at home with your mum and you can save money by working and you know, putting it all aside, stay there. That's honestly what I would recommend. Because that's what me and my partner had to do. Everyone I've known that's got onto the property ladder, they didn't go from renting into a mortgage side of things. They always had to hold out.
You build at home. Grow at home.
Again, it depends on circumstance. Because, you know, some people don't get on with their parents as much. Some people haven't got that luxury of staying with their parents for so long. But yeah, with the interest rate side of things, it's only going to be like this temporarily. Obviously, everything's playing catch up because of COVID, Brexit, everything else that's happened over the last few years.
Yeah.
So it will get to a point where the interest rates are better and a lot more stable.
Yeah.
But I don't think people should take that gamble and say, well, if anything, we'll just do this to do this later, when they could just hold off and be in a position where they could just basically be patient and then wait for it to kind of settle down and then purchase at the right time.
That's true. And especially like, online, quite often, people will say, like, ethnics will say, you might save money at home, what you pay in emotional, like, parents.
100%.
And it's interesting. How is that, like, with you, though? Like, you know, you, like, you stay at home for a bit to grow and and to work and to earn and save. How that relationship, like,
it was very hard because, you know, we can see the vision. They can see it too, but at the same time, they want you to, you know, get out. They don't want you in the house as much because, you know, they feel like you should be over here.
Yeah.
When you can see that you will be over there, it's just, it's going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah.
So I said, our parents were quite understanding. Her parents especially as well, you know, helped us, and my parents helped as well to get onto the ladder. So yeah, it really depends on circumstance, because I know some people don't have that luxury. But yeah, it was
it's nice, a blessing, you know, like I think about it, because I work with some people who they have to rent, like, in London, as young as I am, and it's like, wow, like, I'm able to live at home, and I do I pay bills and stuff at home, but it's still the luxury of, or the blessing of, okay, I've got parents and a family who I can stay with,
of course,
and build and save. So it's important. It is like a big blessing, and like, and not everyone had the opportunity. Exactly. Right? So
as long as you contribute as well. Yeah, I know some people try to do things where, okay, fair enough, they may have a plan, but they're not telling their parents the plan. Mm. So then their parents are thinking, well, you're living here without contributing to anything.
Yeah.
And then they want to go out partying or whatever not. Whereas if you're telling your parents, look, honestly, look, this is what I'm planning to do. I want to move out, but I just need a bit of time to get some money together, but I'm still happy to pay for the electric or council tax, whatever it is.
No.
It's all these little things that will make your parents appreciate that you're just trying to better yourself. That's all it is. And if they can support that, it's even better.
100%. No, it's serious, man. 100%. It's interesting, like, you know what we touched upon, like, you know, the mortgage rates and stuff.
Mm.
I do kind of get a sense that the economy is kind of getting into a better place. Like, because during the past week, the inflation rate was, it remained at 2%.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which is the Bank of England's like target, right?
Mm-hmm.
So from that point of view, like, things are kind of getting to a better place, but how do you feel that the market is like now, like in terms of the economy and stuff?
People are still
post-election as well, obviously.
Yeah, post-election. People, I know, were waiting for something to change from the election.
Yeah.
Some people knew that there wasn't going to be much change. I think some people are still on the fence.
It'll take time, right?
To do. Yeah, everything takes a little bit of time. Plus, during this period at the moment anyway, a lot of people aren't genuinely thinking about moving because this is holiday season. You know, everybody's people with kids or even people without kids. This is when everyone wants to enjoy the summer holidays, 6 weeks. And then when they come back, this is when people start to think to move for the Christmas period. So, yeah, I think it will get better. It's just, as I said, like another thing of people just being a bit more patient. At least there's a lot less scaremongering in the news now, whereas last year it was a lot. Pretty much most of the news articles were talking about the rates and making people a lot more nervous.
Okay, it's definitely it's something that I feel like will continue to get better as time goes on. I did actually hear about a new mortgage deal over the past few weeks. So Gen H is like a mortgage lender.
Okay.
And they've changed their criteria like over the past few weeks.
Mm.
And it will now accept family, friends, nieces and nephews as income boosters on products.
Okay.
Which I found quite interesting. Mm. And of course, like, I was reading up about it, and of course the spokesperson said that it's all an attempt to help people try to get onto the ladder.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How do you kind of feel about those kind of schemes to help people onto the ladder?
You know, bring as many schemes as they can. Because there needs to be some support and help for people that just want to buy their first house. It's so difficult to do it.
Yeah.
And any way that they can think of doing it, whether it's some sort of contribution, help to buyers, ISAs, whatever it is, just something just to give people a little bit of a boost and something to look forward to.
100%.
As it stands, everyone's just left in a position where they're left to their own devices and you actually have to figure it out on your own. Yeah, there's not a lot of support.
100%. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm seeing that as well because, like, you can almost use your friends and family or your nieces and nephews.
Mm.
Of course, I'm assuming you'd be someone older, and your niece and nephew maybe in their 30s and 20s and stuff.
Yeah,
I'm assuming how that would work.
Mm-hmm,
but yeah, so like, yeah, I guess like whatever helps, right?
Yeah.
Like, whatever helps people to get onto the ladder and stuff 100%.
I'm all for it, man. Honestly,
it's very interesting. And the conversation that we were having a bit earlier, and it links to this next one. Yeah. Because I saw a report in the Daily Mail, and it said that so young people who move houses in between the ages of 10 and 15,
right?
Yeah, had a 41% of having a depression,
right?
Yeah, wow. So 10 and 15 moving houses, and that figure jumped to 61%.
Wow,
if you move twice.
Okay.
In that age frame.
Wow, wow, wow.
So, I've been there thinking, I was fortunate, like, I didn't move in that age range.
Mm.
I kind of moved, and I was actually, I maybe might have just edged into it, but I was a bit younger than that.
Mm.
And I was thinking, like, you know when you move at a young age, you think the impacts are that severe?
Again, circumstantial.
Yeah.
It really depends on what led that person to think I'm going to move anyway.
Yeah.
Because it might be a case where they were forced to move and they had no choice.
Mm.
So, but I do understand where this could be stress and somewhat depression.
Yeah.
Because I'll be honest, they even say it, the moving process is extremely stressful.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be. Mm. Again, this is something that the UK should also play a part to support, because they don't have a quick system in place. So every other country, you know, you can put a deposit down and you can move into a property within weeks of making an offer. Whereas in the UK, it's this 12 to 16 week process, which puts people under stress, under pressure, especially if they've got quite intense jobs on top of it. If you're a younger person dealing with that and not knowing what comes with the territory and you've got no guidance, you know.
I can see
where people could get depressed.
I did want to ask, actually, you know when, like, you were younger, like, in terms of, like, childhood?
Did
you move around a lot? Or were you quite steady?
To be fair, I moved out of my mum's. My mum and dad broke up when I was younger. Me and my dad moved a couple of times. And then we kind of settled ourselves down in kind of Plumstead Village, southeast London. And, from there, I said, before that, there was a lot of movement.
You think it impacted you? At the age that said between 10 and 15, it's the key age where it's like, if you move, I think it's just school years, right?
Yes, yeah.
So, like, you know, when you move in those years, it's really, it can really unsettle you, because friends in school, like, even your interests, your sports that you do,
100%.
You might be in a local sports team that you can no longer be a part of. How do you feel like it kind of impacted you? Or even if it did?
To be fair, I said it kind of helped me become the character I am today. Mm. Obviously, to be fair, my childhood, you know, got into trouble and whatever, but who doesn't? But to be honest, moving around quite a bit at the time was something that was different, because I was used to, you know, being in one household, never move when I was with my mum. My mum's still where she is at the moment. Obviously, with my dad, we needed to move so that we had a bigger place and what have you.
Yeah.
So, once we was finally settled, it was nice to have a base. It definitely helped improve with my behaviour, friends and whatever not around. So, I think, again, it really depends on the type of person and how strong-minded you are that you can kind of handle moving around as much.
Yeah, 100%. In recent news, man, the like agenda has been strong recently, but a recent story that I did want to touch on, I'm sure you've probably heard of it, you couldn't miss it, Donald Trump.
Oh yeah, of course. God.
it's interesting. What did you think when you first saw that clip? And I'm assuming you know the clip I'm on about, right?
Yeah, well, sure.
Yeah. What did you, like, your, like, initial thoughts on it?
I don't know whether it's staged or, you know, if you're shooting from as a sniper, surely you wouldn't miss. You wouldn't miss, I thought. But I'll be honest, I don't like Donald Trump. I'm completely honest. I just don't support his views.
Sure.
I never really have. I thought it could potentially be staged for more publicity so that he could get re-elected. I thought that might be the case.
It's interesting because when I read into it, the person who shot, he got executed on the spot. So I was kind of thinking, is that really staged? Because I know there's a lot of people out there who love Trump, right? But to sacrifice your life for him, golly, like, that feels a bit far, do you know what I mean? So I'm thinking that it might have been a genuine attempt. And then, of course, optics now look like he's the hero. He had his hand up in that picture. It looks like now he's the great survivor of this, right? So it's just interesting, like, from an optics point of view. But if I'm honest, it's hard to look past the euphoria of it and him as a, like, personality. Like, I don't agree with his views, but, like, him as a personality, I get why he captivates so many people. Because it's like, this guy is just like a maverick. That was interesting seeing that. Have you been keeping across the presidential race over there? Or not really?
There's
enough going on here, right?
There's enough going on here, man. Honestly, about
there's enough going on here. Yeah,
brainwashed people in America. It's just
enough going on here. And over the past week, there's been like a lot, like even the UK, like the riots in Leeds. It's been a lot.
The power outage as well.
Power outage. Oh yeah, that's huge. That even impacted some like airlines as well. So it seems like there's some like social unrest currently, but we'll see how the tables fall and how the chips fall. 100%. In regards to there, there's one more that I did want to touch on. So there was a report in the Telegraph, and it was saying that how the buy-to-let market has shrunk.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And in the first half of 2024, it saw the lowest amount of like house on the market that are a buy-to-let, and the lowest since 1966. Sorry, 96.
Wow.
So over 30 years. Well, almost 30 years, right? So I did want to ask you. I know, of course, like it might not be, you know, you all are across on an like, everyday basis, but from like a buy-to-let point of view, would you say the market is kind of, I guess the owners are kind of thinking, let me hold off until it's in a better place.
It's not a market for them, and it hasn't been for a while simply because of the rates.
Yeah,
because they're having to put down 25%. So they're having to put down a lot more than what the average 10%, 15%.
Yeah.
So with the rates being so high on additionally, and then them then having to pay stuff like stamp duty, it's just not a market that they can benefit in, really, because even if they was to get a property for cheap, because they're having to put so much down and the rates are so high, they're out of pocket before they even start. But in a way, for agents like myself, it does kind of cut out some time wasters. Because the only downside to buy to let is that they always are looking for a deal.
Yeah.
Whereas the only people in the market now are people that are downsizing, upscaling, cash buyers and first time buyers, which are all people that, okay, fair enough, cash buyers do use that whole, you know, I'm cash, so I should get it for cheaper.
Yeah.
But buy to let, because they know that their yield has got to be a certain amount, they tend to, you know, really try to knock down the price even more than what cash buyers do sometimes. So if anything, it's actually made it an easier market for us to work in whilst 100%. They're not there. But they will return once rates are obviously better.
100%, yeah, it will return. It is interesting because, yeah, like, I'm seeing, like, a lot of it, like, the owner, like, it's not a market for them at all. So you're going to hold off on the sidelines and wait for it to...
Plus, there's other things that they're putting in place for the buy-to-let market in terms of, so, for example, the EPC... rating, which is the energy performance certificate, that needs to be a minimum of a C. So any landlords currently that have properties that are higher than that, like D's, F's, whatever, they're gonna have to, you know, have their windows done, new radiators in place.
All cost money, right?
Cost money.
Yeah.
Which again, that on top of then the rates, you know, they're pretty much dead from the time they begin.
Yeah, the EPC thing is interesting because I work in PR, and a few years ago I was working across Skip to Builder Society.
Okay.
And they like, are big on that, like, EPCs, right? So doing like, a lot of work around that. And it's, yeah, like, quite often, like, you might have to do work like that. It will cost up to, like, £1,000 or £2,000to change the windows or change the installation, whatever it may be, right? So it's a big thing right now to be in the internet.
By 2025, they have to have all that stuff in place.
Yeah.
If it's not, you know, they could end up incurring fines for each thing that isn't done.
Yeah. 100%. There's a lot going on, man. Now, I enjoyed the conversation, man. I appreciate you for jumping down.
No worries, man. And, sorry it's taking so long to
get it's all good, man. The journey's been great to hear about. One last question though. What would you say has been the best lesson that you've learned in your journey in the realtor market? Or industry, I should say.
That's a good question. I think with real estate, a lot of what I've come to realize with other people that have joined and me seeing myself different and quite unique to others is I'm very passionate about the work I do and the way I want it to come across. Hence why I, you know, my videos are different. The way that I negotiate is slightly different as well. So I feel like I've had to, you know, really put my all into this to make it work. And I think, you know, there's been times, I'll be honest, where I thought this is long. You know, I want to give up. Yeah. I don't want to do this anymore.
Part of the journey though, right?
It's part of the journey, but people don't see the behind the scenes. You know, they don't see, you know, the hard days I've had to go through where, you know, at the beginning, the money just wasn't there. But yeah, I think me capitalizing on my passion has definitely been something that has helped me on this journey. And I think without it and without wanting this so much, I wouldn't be where I am today, and obviously for the future as well. Because I said there's still a lot more for me to do. I've only really just begun where I really want
to
be.
No, that's great to hear as well. And I did also want to ask actually, who edits your video? Do you edit your videos?
I don't edit them, but I direct them.
Direct them, okay.
So
I come. Edits are really good. Like,
it's Boom Slam Media. I'll give him a plug. He's definitely one of the best videographers I've come
across. Very serious edits. Yeah. Very serious edits. B-roll, everything.
100%. So pretty much I come from a videography. Again, I'll plug myself. I used to be, if you might have heard it, RD Vision, Realms Design Vision.
Okay.
So I was kind of like the SBTV of Southeast London and surrounding. There's a lot of people, musicians, talented artists that I put on the map back then when I used to do it. And in fact, my old business partner Wawa, he's now filming, you know, the likes of Mo Stack, Captain Conan, etc. And he's doing really, really well for himself. So shout out to him. But yeah, in regards to the videography side, I've always got that creative eye. So every video that you see on my Instagram or Rightmove, wherever you see it, they've all had my input in it. From the idea of, you know, out with the old, in with the new, with, you know, the old estate agents and now with the newer ones in place.
Yeah.
To the one that I did recently where, you know, the camera's coming back and then you see the property as a whole.
Yeah.
I've got some really I've only just started, to be honest. I've got some really creative. I'm just scratching the surface because I always like to push Tyler, which is the owner of Boom Slang Media, at that little bit further.
When
he goes and films quite a lot of other real estate agents, they pretty much just, you know, they do their videos and they go home and it's pretty much the same kind of video on repeat. Whereas in myself, every time I see him, I'm like, right, so in this video, we're going to do this.
Mm.
He's like, where do you even think it?
Pushing the boundaries, right?
We just got to push a little bit more. So it's I don't want it to be corny and I don't want to become a gimmick.
Yeah.
That's why I always try to keep my videos significant to the house, because with my videos in particular, I want it to the house to talk. I don't want it to be about me. That's why I spend a lot less time talking about, you know, this is a kitchen, this is a bathroom. People can see that for themselves. So I don't need to illustrate that unless there's something significant that the owner has done. You know, I wouldn't go to a £3 million property and not talk about, you know, the finish, like whether it's the stone worktops or whatever else they put in, about waterfalls, whatever. But especially in regards to the direction of where it goes next, I just want to entice people so that when they see my videos, they know, this is Reese, you know, I can tell this is different. This is not going to be the same.
It's top level, right?
And it's top level and they never know what's coming next.
Sure.
Like even the video that me and Tyler have got for next month is going to be very serious, to say the least. But yeah,
that's good, man.
I'm heavily involved in that. But his edits are what creates the magic. Even the one we did in Canary Wharf, not far from here, we basically looked at, there was binoculars on the windowsill.
Yeah.
We both looked at it. We looked at each other and we knew exactly what each other was thinking. So it's just the way that creatives think. And you know, the video came to life from there, and you know, it's really nice to work with someone that has a similar mindset, especially when it comes to being creative.
100%. Nah, man. That's great to hear about that journey. A lot more to come.
Oh yeah, 100%. Definitely.
And we'll be tapped into the journey for sure, man.
I said we're just getting started. It's kind of warming up at the moment.
For sure.
Just getting foundations in place.
Foundations, man. But yeah, guys, if you enjoyed that episode, ensure that you like, you comment, you subscribe. We are on the way to 100 subscribers as well, so make sure that you're tapped in. We've got more conversations coming. It's been a little while, I'll be honest. It's been a little while, but we're back. We're going to be flowing more content, more videos, more conversations that leave you enlightened. That's how I go here on the Isn't Easy podcast. So have a blessed week, have a blessed day. Wherever you're watching this, have a blessed time. I will see you next time. Peace.